Hi all, Scott here. Welcome to episode 47 of the Dad Train podcast. Now, I don't normally do a preamble to this show, but because of the way this interview turned out, I thought maybe it was warranted on this occasion. You see, this is an interview I recorded over a month ago now, and I've been kind of holding off publishing it for a few reasons, which will become clearer once you listen to it. Basically, what you're about to witness is me being talked into taking on a challenge that I really didn't plan or want to do. In fact, it gets a bit uncomfortable at one point, and you will hear me becoming quite squeamish when I was put on the spot and issued with the challenge. But I did agree to it, despite not loving the idea, so I guess I've been holding off publishing this because it's kind of the point of no return. Once I make this one public, there's no turning back, and well, that scares me a lot, but what the hell, here goes. This is my interview with Rowrie Fairbarns, and it's my public pledge to take a 90-day break from alcohol. Now, as a final warning to you, if you really, really, really feel strongly that you definitely don't want to take a break from alcohol yourself, then you might want to stop listening now, because the person who I'm interviewing here, Rowrie Fairbarns, is both very passionate and very convincing. So if you're not careful, you may come away from this feeling compelled to take on the challenge yourself. Anyway, you've now been warned, so let's get into it. Here is episode 47, my potentially life-changing interview with the fast-talking and very convincing Scotsman, Mr. Rowrie Fairbarns from One Year No Beer. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to the Dad Train, where we explore ideas and strategies on how to be a better man, a better partner, and a better dad. I'm your host, Scott Davison. I hope you enjoy this episode and learn something new. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Dad Train. Today we're talking about one of my favorite topics, beer, or more broadly speaking, alcohol. And like many, or perhaps even most of the dads listening to this show, I enjoy a beer. And over the years, my relationship with alcohol has changed quite a lot, but it's always been a constant part of my life. Even during lockdown recently, when the social aspect of drinking was largely removed, I still found myself regularly reaching for a drink at the end of the day or the end of the week, either to relax, to celebrate, or if I'm honest, often sometimes through boredom or habit, just because it's there. And personally, I've never really seriously tried to give it up. I'm not even sure I would want to. But now having a young kid who is watching and copying everything I do, and it's definitely caused me to become a little bit more aware of my drinking habits. And I also know many people, dads in particular, who would like to either reduce how much they drink or in many cases try and take a complete break from drinking. You've heard of Dry July, Feb Fast. I've even heard of something called Oct Sober, which sounds almost sacrilegious to me. But clearly there's plenty of people trying to do this. So if you have ever considered taking a break from alcohol, perhaps you've tried and failed, or perhaps like me, you just want to be more mindful about your drinking habits, then today's interview is for you. My guest is Rowrie Fairbarns, who is the co-founder and CEO of an organization called One Year No Beer. And they are on a mission to transform the world's relationship with alcohol. Now, the One Year No Beer program has been used in over 90 countries, and they have a community of over 100,000 people who've taken on one of their alcohol-free challenges. Rowrie is a father himself, and he's very passionate about helping people change their relationship with alcohol. He's helped literally thousands of dads to take a break from drinking, and I guess it all started with his own story, of course. So let's have a bit of a chat with Rowrie and learn a bit more about this movement. Rowrie, welcome to the Dad Train.
Thank you for having me on. And you're a brave man bringing me on, Scott, especially with that intro, because there's going to be only one outcome from this podcast. Yes. But we'll get to that later.
I'm going to be taking a break, and I thought it might end that way. Like I said, it's not something I've seriously tried, but I know there are plenty of people giving it a go. Maybe we start with that. What's the story behind 1 year no beer? Can you give us a bit of a background on it?
Completely, we can. Let's skip to I'm now living in I'm an oil broker in London, and it's after multiple startups and all sorts of things like that, I became an oil broker in London. And having if you look at my relationship with alcohol through my life, like most people, I probably started having a drink when I was 12 or 13 years old. That may not be like most people, but it certainly is where I come from on the west coast of Scotland. Then it was just a part of life. It was just, that's what everybody did. You did it to fit in. In my 20s, teens and 20s, I was very much a party boy, loved socializing. Never had a problem with alcohol. I mean, quite the opposite. It was just fun. And that was the same with everyone. And it was mostly just weekends then anyway. I certainly wasn't drinking during the week when I was younger. Then into 30s, I started as an oil broker, late 20s. That's where two worlds really collided, partying and being successful. And I could party during the week with my customers, and it might be, a lunch a week and maybe a dinner that didn't finish till 5 o'clock in the morning. And, once or twice a week, you might be doing that. And then at the weekend, catching up with friends. Again, city life, very normal. There's loads of guys who were going out and daily drinking. There was loads of guys who were going out and binging 3, 4, 5 nights a week. That wasn't me. I was doing it 2 or 3 times a week. But it was just drinking culture. I met my wife at a party, drunk, like most people meet their partner. And we started to have a family. And then this started to wear a bit thin. I had a daughter. And, once or twice a month, I might come home at 4 o'clock in the morning. And she was like, I didn't really sign up for this. And I was like, well, this is what I was like when you met me. You're trying to change me. We've got a nice house and a nice car, and all of these things come because I work in the city, and that's the expectation of me. And, I have to do this. This is my job. And it caused a lot of friction. Equally for me, I believed that the issue in our relationship was her anger. She'd grown up with a very, abusive parent, very abusive, and a very troubled childhood. And, she had a lot of anger, and that anger came out with lots of fighting between us. But then, as it was later, I'd just be like, well, actually, I'd rather skip the train home and stay in the pub and have another pint or two, and text her and say, the trains are delayed. But all of that was just normal. The people around me were saying, well, that's normal. And, I totally understand if you don't want to go home to your angry wife and newborn child, or not necessarily newborn, but in that first 6 months, and you'd rather stay in the pub and have a few beers, okay, well, that was normal. And I guess these things, started to pile up. And one day my wife was like, that's it. I've had enough. I'm out of here. I'll be in Sweden with the girls. And that should have been a massive wake-up call for me, and it was. And I thought that the issue was the job. So I said, fine, I'll quit my job, I think. And I went and approached my boss to quit my job, and he said, don't be ridiculous. Take 6 months and go and sort out your marriage and come back. And we did. Traveled the world a bit, went into counseling, working on our marriage together, came back into the same job. Surely enough, 2 or 3 years later, similar sort of issues were coming up. Now had a second child. Now, one of the big things was always this alcohol was prevalent. Again, it was never a problem. So I wasn't sitting here saying, this was causing me huge issues in my life. Okay, we had a tumultuous marriage and there was lots of blame on different things, but alcohol was just a part of life. And I started meditating on the train, and it made me think, I'm going to find out more about this anger in our marriage. So I signed up to this anger management course, and on it, it said that alcohol and coffee are the two biggest instigators of anger. And I was like, that's interesting. So I'll drop those two and I will see, you know, during this 90-day program and see how I get on. That was where all of my life changed. I mean, it was absolutely profound that to go from having not drunk and, you know, finding it actually doing a break was not too much of a challenge for me. Of course, there was challenges along the way, like how do I still perform at my job as an oil broker not drinking? And how do I still love my wife? And, you know, all of these fears and doubts. But taking the break from alcohol transformed everything. It made me fitter, faster, healthier, happier. It made me a better dad, a better husband. It made me calmer. It made me have more clarity, more purpose, more meaning in my life. It removed multiple little niggling health issues I never even associated with drinking, like IBS, psoriasis, which I had in a small way. You know, all of these things started to disappear. Now, the thing was, you know, not drinking is not the miracle cure. It's not the miracle cure, the tonic that will suddenly transform every area of your life, but it is the keystone habit. It's the one thing that unlocks everything else, right? Because when you stop drinking, you're given energy, you're given clarity, you're given more time, you're given a greater sense of purpose on what you really want to achieve. Those four things are powerful concoction that give you all the tools you need to go and totally transform your life. So in the discovery of my own journey, I was like, how do I help more people realize this? Because what I thought not drinking was, you're going to be boring. Nobody's going to like you. You're going to be this ostracized from society. What kind of weirdo doesn't drink? You kidding me? Like, go over there and be in that corner. You must have had a problem. But that's what I thought not drinking was. But the truth of not drinking was, well, actually, I'm showing up way better in my work life, in my relationships, in my health. I'm saving more money and I'm making more money. I'm being more productive. I'm happier. It's only benefits. How do I help more people realize the truth? You know what? It doesn't matter how many times you stand in front of people and tell them, you'll be so much happier if you stop drinking, because they'll go away. I don't care. You weirdo. You're being evangelical. So how do we get people to do this? You know what? Why don't we just dress it up as a challenge? You know, like that kind of challenge where people say, hey, do you think we could do a half marathon together? Or why don't we climb Everest, like a really big challenge? Or let's go and do something adventurous together as a group of pals, right? Let's go and challenge ourselves to not drink for 28 or 90 days. Make it fun, exciting, adventurous, life-changing. And while I'm doing that challenge, we are going to fill you full of tips and ideas on how you change your relationship with alcohol that will probably change your life. And that's where the idea for One Beer No Beer came from. We're now over 80,000 members, soon to be 90,000 members in 90 countries. We've had a massive impact, you know, and the wider following is obviously much greater than that. And yeah, that's what I do today. Long story, but sorry. No,
it's a fantastic story. Thank you for sharing that. And how's things with your wife these days? That's my first question. And then Terrible. The second part of that is you mentioned that she was also the one that had the anger issues. So did she take a break from drinking at the same time you did, or how did that bit work?
There are some things I've learned about life and certainly marriage and things like that. And that is, when you're standing opposite somebody expecting them to change, it will never happen. You must lead by example. And so that now has become the mantra for my life. Lead by example. Never expect somebody to do something you haven't already done yourself. So that's what the very purpose of going on that anger management program was because I wanted to understand. Of course, it turns out I'm an angry person as well. I've got anger issues. And that I was never admitting that, but it took me to go and take the first leap to discover it. And of course, if you look back to who she was then and who she is now, you wouldn't recognize they're totally transformed human beings. You know, my wife now runs a very successful coaching business. She coaches mums who want to be much more and bigger and greater than herself. She has delved right through the depths of her own pain and suffering. She has gone through her trauma, and she's gone through all of that discovery because I started the journey of leading by example. And then I just showed her what transformed for myself. And it's not like rubbing it in their face, like, oh, look how good I am today. Why don't you be as good as me? It's just being the best you can be. And then they will either follow. And you know what? If they don't follow, then they'll end up getting off the bus. But 9 times out of 10, you know, or way more than that, 99.999999 times out of 100, they will absolutely follow. So how is my wife today? Again, you know, she's done so much work on that anger. And once she tapped into that herself, her own anger, her own pain, her own suffering, that was, of course, her gold. That was the bit that helped her speak to any woman about abuse or growing up or pain, suffering, the troubles of motherhood, all of those things. So she can speak so directly to women now. It's a very powerful thing.
Yep. And what is the mix of genders in terms of the people that are taking on these challenges? Because it sounds like it started as sort of a blokey thing. And I know those sort of challenges can be a really good way to connect with guys, you know, the Movember type approach to getting guys to participate in things that are actually good for them. But what sort of people are doing the challenge these days, and what's the mix and demographics?
There's actually a lot in this question. So to answer it specifically, we're about 60% female, 40% male. We aimed it absolutely spot on between the eyeballs for ourselves, which was the brokers in the city, the lads, the binge drinkers, the binge culture. That's who we wanted to tap into because we believed that there was no support there for us, for them, for me. There was none. And so what would that support like? Like, you know, changing my relationship with alcohol over 2 years was a long, bouncy, all over the place process. How can I condense all that learning into something which is going to give somebody what I learned in 2 years in 90 days? And that was really part of the challenge. And I think the thing is, when we look at our very troublesome relationship with alcohol in society, one of the most important things for every human being is that we decide whether we should do something or not, whether we should say something or not, based on status. And that is that identity is formed from a very young age, all part of our ego. And that when we decide to do something or not, we're asking ourselves the question, does that lift or lower my status in society? Well, of course, in the society we live in, not drinking appears to lower your status. Mm-hmm. So why would we ever do that? And that's more prevalent in men than it is in women. And so the funnily enough, more women choose not to drink or choose to change their relationship with alcohol than men. There are also some other factors, like for women, they go through a period of being expected not to drink, which is called, you know, having a baby, and all sorts of things like that. Whereas for men, it is a more intricately, for many men, I'm not making all assumptions on men, it's a very intrinsically related part of our identity. I am a beer drinker. I am a whiskey drinker. I'm a fast drinker. I'm a slow drinker. I'm a rugby drinker. I'm a binge drinker. I only drink this. I drink these. This is how I, you know, that becomes part of who we are. And when it's so ingrained in our belief of who we are, it's very hard. Professor BJ Fogg talks about bad habits being like weeds. And over time, just like a weed, it grows and it grows and it grows into different reward centers and areas of our brain. You know, in the early, as we're growing up, it's about belonging and status and identity and do I fit in? And then it's about having fun and relaxing, you know, having fun and having a good time and being a cool person. And then later it's about unwinding and relaxing and all of these things, de-stressing, dealing with the kids. And all of those links are created on create an autopilot. And so we just go through life on absolute autopilot with our relationship with alcohol. And the bit I know, and the reason why I'm so passionate about this subject, is that if I pluck you out of autopilot and I plop you into minimum 28 days, but most likely your 90-day self, having gone through this, I know absolutely guaranteed you will not drink anywhere near as much or at all as much as you used to. Right. So, but that's not because I've forced you to. That's not because I made you. That's because you realized the truth about your relationship with alcohol. So you could see how I could get really passionate about this, because I'm like, if I can just, during this conversation with you on this podcast, if I can convince you that this is worth trying, just this is worth trying, then not only will it probably change your relationship with alcohol, but it could change your life. That's why I get so passionate about the subject. And then it doesn't matter the conversation about how much you drink or whether you drink one beer or I'm only just a half a beer drinker at the weekends or anything like that is irrelevant because what I'm saying is this challenge will probably change your life. Therefore, it's worth doing.
Okay, we're getting there. I think I know where this call's heading, and I should have thought about that. I should have thought about that before I agreed to do this discussion. Maybe I should have finished that bottle of whiskey I've been saving. But anyway, you mentioned about the culture, you know, and you're Scottish, right? So you're in Edinburgh, are you?
Yep.
Yeah, which is Mull. Okay. Which Scotland's obviously a big drinking culture, as is most of UK, and I'm in Australia where
is Australia.
Yeah, similar sort of macho approach to drinking. But you're saying that this program's now in 90 countries. Have you noticed any sort of cultural differences around how different countries and different cultures approach alcohol?
Oh, totally. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of different behaviors, you know, because I think most of it comes under the subject matter of denial, right? So most people are busy saying, well, I don't drink that much, so I'm okay. I only really have a drink when I'm out with the boys once a week. You know, I'm fine. There's no real problem. And I think that what we were trying to do is, or what we've discovered, is that anyone drinking more than 3 glasses of wine a week, right? So really, that's like 9-10 units a week. Hardly anything. Anyone drinking more than that regularly will probably have a massive impact in taking the challenge. And we've seen so many people come through this. So one woman who had lifelong anxiety, she's on anxiety medication, she's seen multiple psychiatrists, doctors, you know, she came into the program and, you know, 100 days, she's like, I've stopped taking my anxiety medication. It's just anxiety evaporated. And you're like, it's crazy that she would go through all that testing, all that suffering, all that pain without any of those doctors saying, stop drinking the half a glass of wine a day she was taking. She was drinking half a glass of wine a day so that she could sleep better. Well, we know that alcohol ruins sleep. You know, alcohol stops you getting that deep REM sleep, which then sets you up for another day of needing a drink again. I'm talking around in circles, but that's the ADHD. Okay. Apologies. To answer the question directly, which I'm obviously not very good at. But so yes, very different into drinking cultures, whether it's binge drinking or, you know, for instance, like in Germany, well, we just have a little drink with our meal, or, you know, Europe is, we just drink with our meal. But yeah, but how many units are you actually consuming? Oh, well, you know, well, we'd do it most meals and we'd have at least a glass, if not a glass and a half. Okay, well, that's well above the limit. You know, when Dame Sally Davis came out and said, what's the limit? You know, change the limit to 14 units in the UK. She said, I want you to know that there's no safe limit. So let's just hone in on that for 1 second, because this is the subject people don't like to talk about. What we don't like to talk about is the truth. What is the truth? Let's Google it. What is alcohol? It's a colorless, flammable, volatile liquid also used as a fuel source known as ethanol. Where do you get ethanol from? You get it from the hardware store and it's got a skull and crossbones on it. If the same legislation was in place for alcohol as it is for tobacco, it would have a skull and crossbones on it. If it said, like medication, this will cause you to have suicidal thoughts. This will cause you to increase anxiety. This will make you gain weight. This is going to give you cancer, 100% linked to cancer, responsible for 6% of all diseases. You're 8 times more likely to commit suicide after a drink of alcohol. I mean, so the truth is, it is so damaging, but then it's been covered over in society with it. It's fun. It's a great relaxation. It's exciting. It's all perfectly okay. So I think there's a coming tidal wave of society changing its relationship with alcohol. I think over the next decade, alcohol will be considerably less prevalent and we'll see other forms of drinking come forward. But more importantly on that fact is that we are all going to change our relationship with alcohol over the next 10 years. So why not lead by example? Why not get this and think, you know what, maybe there's some benefits in there. You know, one more thing onto there, Scott, is that this, I'm very passionate about this subject matter that we are talking about right now, which is dads. right? You know, stop drinking or not drinking made me considerably better dad in every aspect. It made me less tired when I had to get up in the middle of the night. It made me be able to show up more for my wife, be more considerate. It made me calmer and more peaceful with my kids when I was later. The amount of time drinking takes, like, what is the moment you start drinking? Is it five? Is it six? You're now in your own head. You're not really showing up for the people around you. You're just being in your own head from like 6 p.m. And then hangovers, like what kids and hangovers do not mix, period. Yep. So the one thing, this is like the one thing that could really improve your parenting is actually to say, you know what, I'm going to not booze on the head for a little bit. Focus on being a strong dad. You know, I'll pause there.
No, it's like I mentioned that in the intro, but that's certainly one of the things that causes you to be a lot more aware of all your habits, drinking being one of them, is, you know, that you are leading by example. So, yeah, that's another good motivation to give it a go. So how does the program work, Rory? So you... obviously, the name's 1 year no beer, but you've referred mostly to the 90-day challenge. But what are the different programs and what are the different types of support that you offer?
So there's a 28-day challenge, a 90-day challenge, and a 365. The sole purpose of the 28-day challenge is to get you to do the 90 because that's where most of the magic happens. For most people, they have an epiphany between 40 and 60 days, okay, on average. What is an epiphany? Well, the truth is that alcohol, over time, even if you've only consumed it once a week, over time has this depressing effect on you. And it brings down your mental health, brings down your physical health. And we have seen for the vast majority of our members that between 40 and 60 days, they bounce back up to the surface. This is when you realize that you thought you were going through life at 8 out of 10 or 7 out of 10, but the truth is you were going through it at 4 out of 10. And suddenly you bounce up and you find this 8, 9, even 10 out of 10 for a bit. Oh my God, to feel that. But more importantly, to see that in our communities, people posting like, I cannot believe I feel this good and I wish I'd done this sooner. Almost every single member says those things. I had no idea alcohol was having this impact on my life and I wish I'd done this sooner. Right? This is why we have to get this message out here, Scott. And then the second thing is, so how does the actual challenge work? We looked at this piece and we said, look, there's plenty of charities out there that are doing don't drink for a month. Okay. And it sort of looks like this. What you do is you challenge yourself to not drink for a month. You use willpower. You avoid your social circle. You cancel your friends and your things and you hide away at home and count down the days until the first of the month when you can have a drink again. But all you're doing there is reaffirming the belief that you need alcohol to have a nice life, to have fun, to have a good time. So what we've actually got to do is go through a process of changing our relationship with alcohol. And what does that mean? Well, it means that there are reasons why you are drinking. Is it to unwind and de-stress? Well, alcohol is like completely the opposite of that. Alcohol creates the stress in the first place. The very thing that you're taking it for, it's causing more of, right? What does really relieve stress? Well, exercise and meditation and yoga and connection and kindness. These things actually help you unwind. Okay, so let's start some routines with that. What about having fun and feeling social inclusion? Okay, well, did you feel social inclusion when you were 12 years old running around the playground? Yes. So you know that you can feel social inclusion without alcohol. Great. We just have to teach ourselves that again. So how do I do that? Well, it's difficult during lockdown, but maybe I need to go and combine two things like, you know what, maybe I'm going to go and join the tennis club or rugby or CrossFit where I can go and exercise and be with people and have fun and release dopamine at the same time. So these are the kind of things that we have to add more into our life because that's what we're missing and that's what's driving us to drink. So all of that, you sign up to a challenge, you get daily emails, daily videos, which help you think about your relationship with alcohol totally different. And then the most powerful thing is the community. So again, the main reason why we drink is because we've been conditioned by society and people around us to have this autopilot in our brains. It just automatically reacts, I need a drink. But most importantly, that peer pressure is what surrounded us, that feeling of status. So if you're going to change your behavior with something, you must have a community around you. If you are doing it on your own, you'll end up falling back in the way. And so we wanted to remove this idea that changing relationship with alcohol was a negative thing. Like, oh, you're one of those people who doesn't drink. Well, you must have had a problem. You need to go over to that community center, sit in a circle and talk about being stigmatized for the rest of your life. And we were like, no, we don't want that. What we want is to be the people who are high-fiving, whooping and celebrating, being better at life, being a better dad, being a better husband, being more successful, being better at work. And not only that, but when we get together, we're going to get together at proper challenges like Spartan races or triathlons or things like that, because we're the people who are choosing to live life better, not the people who are choosing to live life worse. And so that was how we flipped it on its head. And we created a community of people who want to connect over the common goal of living life better.
No, it's an incredible movement you've created, and it's clear how passionate you are about it. So thanks for coming on and sort of sharing a bit of your story. Hopefully you've inspired a few people to give it a go. I've had a few different guests on this show previously, and I've always vowed to not practice what I preach, but the philosophy of this program is present different ideas, different ways of doing things, try them for yourself, pick the ones that work for you, drop the ones that don't, maybe tweak them to make them work for you. And this is one where I think I'll definitely give that a go, because as I say, we had Brad Pillen on talking about intermittent fasting as an example.
Yeah, great.
And a lot of dads have tried that. It wasn't something I thought I wanted to necessarily do, but I thought I'll give it a go for a few goes just to see what it was like. And it was an interesting thing to trial. That's an example of one that I then haven't really stuck with, because I wasn't longer term, it wasn't something I wanted to try, but it was, you know, I like trying these challenges. So I think this is going to end the way you predicted, in that I'll be signing up for the challenge.
Oh, yeah. 90 days.
90
Come
days
on,
minimum.
Scott. Yeah. Everyone can do 28 days. Yeah. And you are somebody who's leading by example. You know, we're people who are, you know, have fortunate, we have people of influence, because we have people who are listening to our podcasts and listening to what we're bringing. And there is no better way to show up for people than leading by example. Now, all the reasons why the 90-day, let's just dig into that for a second. So what's the hesitation for you in saying, yep, Ruri, I'm ready for the 90-day challenge right now? What's holding you back?
Well, it's all those things you mentioned that, you know, alcohol for me has become part of my personality almost.
Yep.
I guess that's the fear that I lose that part of who I am. And, you know, probably the social stigma is there as well. Yep. And I have been using alcohol as a form of self-medication, for want of a better word. You know, I use totally. It for stress relief, to yep. change my mood sometimes when I'm down. Yep. But, yeah, I have to admit, I have at times under extreme stress reached for alcohol and sort of stopped myself and thought, no, that's not really how I want to be using it. So what's the hesitation? The hesitation is, this is a public forum, and once I say I'm going to do something here, that's
done.
I've got all the listeners keeping me honest, so that's my accountability partners. But what the hell, let's go for it, Ruri.
Good, excellent. So I just want to address those things you said, because they're really powerful, and let's open them up for other people.
Yep.
The first thing that I guarantee you 100% is that in 90 days you will say to me, you know, all that stuff I thought, it was bullshit. I can't believe I really thought I was going to lose my identity when I decided to change my relationship with alcohol. Let's just say this is a 90-day challenge. This is not forever. If you want to go back to binge drinking on day 91, that's totally up to you, right? No problem. There's no pressure here for you to change your identity forever. But what I am going to say is, you are going to, because you're going to realize, oh my God, I can't believe I thought that. I can't believe I felt that way. I can't believe I was really hoodwinked by it, right? So that's the guarantee, and it's an amazing space to get into, because you're like, wow, who am I not drinking? Well, I'm still the same person. if you're the person who goes out and has fun with people, do it. That's what I did. I went out to multiple stag do's. I was still there toe for toe. I was the one calling shots. Mine was a water. I was there at 6:30 in the morning in Berlin's biggest tech house. I'm not changing who I am just because I choose not to put ethanol down me. Okay, so I chose to drink alcohol-free beers. And do you know, that's why this is such a great time, because the rise of alcohol-free drinks means that you can go out now and you can find a good selection of alcohol-free alternatives. Alcohol-free alternatives, load up on them. Go shop those right now. The reason why is that we are trying to prove, change the neuroplasticity in our brain, these neural pathways that have linked, I get to the end of the day and I need to have a drink, right? And it's got alcohol in it. So when you get to the end of the day and you feel stressed and you go to the fridge, the same routine, you open up the fridge, you pick up the bottle, you open it up, it smells like beer, it looks like beer, you taste it and it tastes like beer. And then you find this unwinding happening anyway, because Stanford University took over 1,000 students, gave half of them beer and half of them alcohol-free beer. And 82% of those who were drinking alcohol-free beer were showing signs of being drunk, right? So we're going to trick our brain into realizing it never needed the alcohol in the first place. How awesome is that? So load up on the alcohol-free alternatives. The sense of belonging, all that stuff, it is bullshit. And I believed it. I thought I was jumping off the cliff. I thought my wife wouldn't love me. I thought my friends won't love me anymore. I'm going to be a boring person. Who's going to like me? Nonsense. I still have my whiskey collection. I still bring people round and talk about whiskeys. I love whiskey. I don't really drink it very often. Last time I had a drink. Well, actually, last time I had a whiskey was the new Liars alcohol-free whiskey. And I'm amazed by it. It's so good. So those are the things that you will discover yourself on the journey. It feels like you're jumping off a cliff, but you know what that saying is? When you take that leap forward, the bridge suddenly arrives underneath you. And it's the bridge across to the place you've been trying to get to for so long, where you don't feel like you need a drink to relax. You don't feel like you need a drink to unwind. You know, you say, I take it to try and balance my mood. Well, that's exactly the opposite of what alcohol does. It ruins your mood. It makes you feel more anxious. It makes you feel more depressed. It is eating away at us. And only you will realize that by taking the challenge. There are, of course, millions, tons and tons of other hidden benefits. In fact, I asked into the Facebook group just recently, give me one reason why somebody should take a break from alcohol in 2021. And it has over 500 comments on it, of which 200 are individual. Unbelievable things. You know what I didn't mention, Scott, because this is the dad. We have a guy in Dubai. We now have multiple OYMB babies. He was 5 rounds of IVF. Let's just take a minute to think how painful that is. Right, 5 rounds of IVF were failed. He was told he had too low a swim count. He would never get pregnant naturally. And 100 days into our challenge, and they're pregnant naturally. Yeah, mental. So yeah. That's the thing, is that I don't know what will change for you, but I absolutely guarantee things will change. And you know what? If I'm wrong, then all you did was not drink for 90 days and you can go back to exactly the way you were. And you can call me up and say, Ruri, you're full of shit. That's not true. And you'll be the first person in over 90,000 people in 90 countries.
You're a very good salesman, Ruri. I can't I can't say no to this challenge. So I'm in. So
good man.
You've heard it now. It's out in the public. It's on the podcast.
Yes. Way to lead by example.
And let's check back in 90 days. Ruri, I've picked an interesting time to do it. We've just had our second child. So we've got a young baby in the house. And I guess that is a time when, we are under more stress. A lot of those things I mentioned earlier are probably times when I would be looking for a drink.
Yeah.
So yeah, I hear you. Hopefully the rewards are even more obvious given that situation with the lack of sleep and things like that. So,
totally there.
All right, let's give it a go. I'll sign up after this. And
I can't wait to hear you come back to me and say, just thank God, like they do. You know, once you hop into the community and you'll see so many people saying, thank God I wasn't drinking over lockdown. And if you read in the papers, everyone else is going, thank God I can drink more during lockdown. And you're like, it's the opposite. You just don't realize it. So, I'm excited for you, and well done, Scott. Look forward to hearing from you.
All right. Well, I really didn't think that through, and I really didn't plan for it to end that way. But that's how the interviews ended with me taking on the 90-day alcohol-free challenge. So wish me luck. Thanks, Rory, for coming on the show.
Good man.
And I'll look forward to learning more about the program as I go and seeing some of the support that's offered and some of the community success stories that you're talking about. So thank you. For anyone else who wants to give it a go, I'll put links in the show notes to the website, but just going to your website's the best way to sign up, is it?
Totally, yeah. OneYearNoBeer.com is where all the challenge and content lies. You can find ours on Facebook.com/OneYearNoBeer, Instagram.com/OYNB. And of course, we have a podcast our own on iTunes and Spotify and all that kind of stuff, One Year No Beer.
Fantastic. All right. Thanks again for coming on the show and see you in 90 days.
Well done, mate. Congratulations and thank you.
That was another episode of the Dad Train podcast. I hope you enjoyed that discussion and learned something new. You can find the show notes for this and all previous episodes at thedadtrain.com/podcast. If you're enjoying the show and you'd like to support it, please leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts if you're able to, and spread the word to other dads who may be interested. If you'd like to learn more or to get in touch, you can visit the website, which is thedadtrain.com, or follow me on social media at thedadtrain. Thanks for listening to the show. I do really appreciate your support. I'll be back next week with another episode, but until then, good luck on your journey to be a better man, a better partner, and a better dad. I'm Scott Davison, and you've been listening to The Dad Train.